What can we take from this performance?
Keep up to date with the latest WSL action and the biggest interviews.
And what she enjoyed that goal a little bit too much in terms of... I wasn't a big fan of the Ronaldo celebration.
Subscribe to the Koi Gig podcast stream on the OTB Sports app now.
The News Run on Off The Ball
with Gillette. Put your best face forward with our new and improved razors.
This is News Talk.
Hello there, you welcome along to Tuesday's Off The Ball. So Paul McShane, Irish international, is back where it all began. He's at Manchester United, a club he first joined as a 16-year-old. This time around, age 35, he is their under-23s player coach. Always a really interesting guest, Paul McShane. So he is on the way after 9 o'clock on The Football Show. Any questions, get them in. Tiger Woods spoke to the media at large last week. First time he'd spoken to the media since his car crash in February of this year. Dodged any questions about that, really, and sent a pretty pessimistic note about his return. That said, he's been pictured practicing pretty much every day last week and looking serious about it. So Gary Murphy and Lawrence Donegan will join us after 8 o'clock to discuss. And Ronan Kelleher sat a meteoric 2 years. We'll chat to the Leinster and Irish hooker as well. 53106, the text number. We're at Off The Ball on Twitter. Richie McCormack, hello.
How are you, Joe?
Dave McIntyre with us as well. Hey, Dave.
Hi, lad.
Not incorrect to call Ronan Kelleher's rise meteoric, Dave.
Yeah, he'll probably take exception to being called an overnight sensation. But we have seen his progress in a really meaningful way, particularly in the last 6 months, and he's seen and done an awful lot. But prior to that, there was an awful lot of talk around him for the previous 12 months. And I don't think anyone ever questioned his all-round game. It was just his throwing that maybe saw him not quite get to the peak of his powers as early as he would have liked, but I don't think there's any question that that has improved massively. And combine that with his game around the rest of the field and the potential for him to be in a front row for Leinster and Ireland with Tadhg Furlong and Andrew Porter, it's pretty exciting stuff. And he's in a real scrap as well with Dan Sheehan for that hooking shirt as well with Ireland and with Leinster. So I love watching Ronan Kelleher play. I think you know what you're going to get from him. It's all explosiveness and power and fireworks when he gets the ball under his arm. And let's hope that he stays injury free and he's got a long way to go in his career.
Tiger Woods spoke to the media at large last week. He was hosting the Hero World Challenge and he sounded a very pessimistic note about his chances of ever winning a tournament again. He said of the 2019 Masters win that I've climbed Everest once before. I don't think I've the body to do it again. And that sounded very downbeat. And then Dave, he's on the practice range every single day. He even turned up to the practice range on Sunday in red and the swing was looking good. It's rumoured he's going to play in 2 weeks' time at the PNC with his son. He's messing with my head. He's saying one thing. He's behaving like a man who's trying to come back.
Yeah, I don't really know what to add to what you said there. We would dearly love to see him back. And I listened to you guys in Golf Weekly last week and it wasn't that it was a case of Tiger Woods moving the needle. It was a case of Tiger Woods is the needle when it comes to the game of golf. And him just swinging the club with a wedge for a 12-second video a couple of weeks ago has people doing all sorts of analysis pieces and long-form scribes going on about what he was doing and how his swing looked and how the body looked and how that leg and the sleeve looked. And it would just be absolutely brilliant if we could just get a little more Tiger Woods before he eventually does put the clubs away for good. I don't know why he would be practicing the way he is if he had no ambition to come back playing on the PGA Tour. What would the point of it be? So that does allow us to hold out some hope that all is not lost and that the end hasn't come. But that leg, it was shattered and he had such issues with it. You wonder, will it be able to take the strain of, you know, the full swing and going through a driver and going through the full bag and the practice required for him to be able to compete at a level where he's not just an also-ran, that he can actually be in contention on a Sunday. An awful long way to go to see how that pans out. But just the fact that we're talking about it, the fact there's a shred of hope still there, I know that's what gets you up in the morning and that maybe the Tiger Woods story isn't completely written yet.
Well, we all need a core meaning to our life, Dave, and Tiger Woods is mine. He was asked about the accident as well. Briefly, it was a New York Times journalist who said, I'm wondering what you remember of the accident. And I have a follow-up to that. Everyone thought, well, I'll bet you do. And Woods' reply was, yeah, all those answers have been answered in the investigation, so you can read about it there in that report. And that was that, really, across the 35, 40 minutes. The golfing media generally been criticised for that performance, I think, in the main. This again was an accident where it was early in the morning, perfect visibility, and Woods' car drove off his side of the road across a couple of lanes on the wrong side of the road, all without any signs of braking, and then effectively off a kind of a cliff. So, you know, there's something kind of striking about that. I don't know, Richie, a human side of me says, look, he's only hurt himself here. Let's just let it drift out to sea. And I suppose the journalist would say, well, hang on, there's some fairly striking circumstances here. He needs to be asked about this and held to account in some respect. I suspect Woods feels the matter is very much closed now anyway.
It's a matter of record. He wasn't over the limit or anything like that, I think, during the course of the accident or in the investigations afterwards. So, like, it's hard to pry that open for somebody who was, like, obviously knocked unconscious at the time and hadn't got a clue what had actually happened to him until it's recounted to him. Factor into that as well, it's a pretty difficult situation to try and come back from almost losing a leg, as he put it last week too. I guess it'll be up to him whenever he wants to share whatever happened or what he's found out in the interim since and what's gone on there. But as regards a return, like he did say, to be fair, like that first interview he gave last week to Golf Digest, he was saying that he would pick and choose the events he's going to come back at. So he is going to come back. It's just he's not going to be playing, you know, 40 tournaments a year. He's going to be playing, you know, a handful, maybe a dozen at most, and trying his best at those. But there comes a point, I think we touched upon this before, when the crash, I think, happened back in the spring. At some point, he just has to say, you know, enough. It is time to, as difficult as it is, to concentrate on whatever the next phase of my life is going to be, because he still has, touch wood, although he didn't do much to improve those odds earlier on this year, but touch wood, from his perspective, he has half of his life left. He needs to start figuring out what he's going to do with that, because it's not going to be playing golf full time. It's a difficult thing for any sportsman to kind of broach, particularly if you're the best to ever compete in what you've chosen to do with your life. But that period in his life is here now. And I think he'd be better served to put talk of a return and, you know, romanticism about coming back and winning another big tournament to one side and just say, right, I've got a family. I've got, you know, another 40 odd years left. Let's get on with it.
I think he was almost done anyway, and the accident has overshadowed just how poor he was post-winning at Augusta. For the rest of that year, he missed the cut at the USPGA, he missed the cut at Portrush, where he looked very old and his body did not look good at all, and he was 21st. That was his best finish of that year in the majors after winning at Augusta. And then you take 2020, there was no British Open, but it was 38 at the Masters, 37th at the PGA, and he missed the cut at the US Open. Now, the crash has subsequently happened. But I think, Dave, the writing was starting to be on the wall anyway. You forget he's had a spinal fusion. So, you know, I think increasingly Masters was the Masters. That was climbing Everest. Any hopes of anything else are faint. Now, I know Gary Murphy and Lawrence Donegan have a touch more optimism than I do. So we'll see after 8 o'clock. But, I mean, there was nothing about his form even pre-crash to suggest he was anything close to winning major again.
There wasn't, no. The conditions need to be perfect for Tiger, A, to contend, and B, to, you know, even consider winning. And that was the situation when he did win at Augusta National. I think we know it needs to be warm. We know it probably needs to be pretty forgiving when it comes to errant shots from the tee. And we know that the overall field, maybe at the US Open, for example, is just too much for his body to be able to put up it over the course of 4 days. Like, you think if he's going to win, it will be at Augusta or St. Andrews. And obviously, an Open at St. Andrews is coming down the tracks. So Tiger Woods will no doubt be desperate maybe to play there. He probably feels deep down inside his own mind that he can contend there if he can get himself there, hitting the ball straight. At Augusta National, just caters to all of his deficiencies and brilliance in equal measure. So if he's ever going to win another tournament, it'll be in one of those two places. How often he goes to play there in the near future, we just don't know. But I really hope we see him again. I will be glued to every shot when he does.
Gary Murphy, Lawrence Donegan on the way after 8. Paul McShane with us after 9. Interesting, now back at Manchester United as their under-23s player coach, where he started out as a 16-year-old. So Paul McShane on the way at 9. We should start the news round. It is, as ever, brought to you by Gillette. Put your best face forward with our new and improved razors. Champions League, Richie.
Yeah, into the final 90 minutes of action in Group A of the Champions League tonight. And RB Leipzig have just gone 2-0 up at home to Manchester City. The first of those goals came midway through the first half for the German side from Dominik Szoboszlai. And the second there has come from Silva as well with 19 minutes to go. Andre Silva putting RB Leipzig 2-0 up at home to a Manchester City side. That was pretty strong, to be fair. Jack Grealish had started, Kevin De Bruyne had started, and Phil Foden. But they're going to lose their final game. And not that it matters much, but PSG as well, they're 3-1 up at home to Club Brugge. A lightning start from them. Kylian Mbappe scoring twice in the opening 7 minutes. Lionel Messi added a third just before half time, but Brugge have pulled one back at the Parc des Princes through Mats Ritz. Liverpool are long since guaranteed top spot in Group B. They're away to an AC Milan side still harbouring hopes of the last 16 tonight. Group B really is where all the action is. Alisson starts in goal for Liverpool. Nico Williams, Ibrahima Konate, Nat Phillips and Kostas Tsimikas are there much changed back four in midfield. We've got Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, 19-year-old Tyler Morton and Takumi Minamino, while up front Mo Salah and Sadio Mane are either side of the man of the moment, Divock Origi. The other game in Group B sees Porto play Atletico Madrid. The Spanish champions could find themselves out of Europe tonight unless they win. There's a straight shootout for pole position in Group D at the Bernabeu, where Inter take on Real Madrid, the hosts holding all the cards. They just need a point tonight, while Sheriff have a Europa League place in the bag going into their game with Shakhtar Donetsk. And it's dead rubbers all round in Group C, with group winners Ajax at home to runners-up Sporting. Borussia Dortmund are Europa League bound regardless of their result at home to Besiktas tonight.
I'm amazed Salah and Mane are starting this evening. Amazed.
Seems lunacy. Oh.
There was a game against Minnows before where he played a very strong team, Klopp, and alluded to commercial pressure to play the bigger names. So you just wonder. But I mean...
Yeah.
And they got and this
time last year, I think, against Midtjylland, where Diogo Jota picked up an injury with 3 minutes to go, if memory serves, something like that, something silly. And he was out then for 3 months up until the spring, which kind of cost them in the, what you call it, third quarter of the season. So, yeah, you would hope from their point perspective and their point of view that they don't come off a cropper from this one. But it's a dead rubber. There's literally nothing on the line for them apart from the money that would come with getting 3 points, which is just another ivory back scratcher for them. Like,
speaking of injuries, Bundy Aki then ahead of the weekend.
Yeah, he is. The Connacht coach Andy Friends confirmed that Aki will miss Sunday's Heineken Champions Cup opener with Stade Francais. The centre has failed to recover in time from a knee injury. Paul Boyle is also absent due to twin shoulder and Achilles problems. Meanwhile, Jack Ainger and Oisin Dowling today both signed contract extensions with the province. They are going to remain at the sports ground until 2024.
Now, the Scarlet situation has been resolved.
Yeah, a bit of common sense, I think. Scarlets deciding against playing Saturday's Pool B fixture away to Bristol Bears in the Heineken Champions Cup. 32 members of their frontline squad remain in isolation in Belfast following their recent return from South Africa. Pat Lam's Bristol have been given a 28-0 bonus point win for the game that was scheduled for Ashton Gate. Scarlets say they're putting player welfare top of their agenda, while the EPCR have described the situation as regrettable but are continuing to offer their full support to the Welsh side. Munster, you might remember, in a similar position to the Scarlets, but they're going to fulfil Sunday's game away to Wasps. To that end, they've added 22 players to their roster ahead of that trip to Coventry, but they are able to call upon the likes of Ty Byrne, Peter O'Mahony, Joey Carberry, Conor Murray, Andrew Conway and a couple more internationals too. None of the additions to that squad are over the age of 21. Cardiff are also going to play their game with Toulouse with a scratch squad even, but they can call upon the likes of Josh Adams, Thomas Williams and Ellis Jenkins.
All a bit messy, Dave. We're back to those 28-0 scorelines.
Yeah, we thought we'd seen the last of those. Well, although we always knew there would be a risk that COVID would intervene and interfere again, we have been lucky, I guess, in the amount of sport that we've been able to get under the bridge over the last year or so. There hasn't been an awful lot of huge occasions that have fallen foul of COVID-19, but these 28-0, I know that it's been described as regrettable by the EPCR, and there was some talk of maybe getting these games rescheduled, but the rugby calendar is so congested as it is already, it's nigh impossible to find these, unless you go with dual weekends where, you know, half the Scarlet side, for example, could play in the URC and the other half, their stronger players might line out in a Heineken Champions Cup tie, but that is just so complex and complicated for both sides as well. So yeah, they probably just felt they wouldn't be able to do themselves justice, so they've lost that one. Cardiff hosting Toulouse, like the defending champions, with a bit part squad, a couple of their Welsh internationals. You feel sorry for them. You feel really sorry for Munster, and bearing in mind the difficulties they've had and people still over in South Africa. So there's just so much going on, and there's not a lot you can say about it. Everybody's in an awkward spot here. The human side of it is what is most important, and that everybody's safe, well, everybody that needs to be back with their families is, and the games are secondary to that. But the problem is, it just doesn't come down to this weekend. Like, Bristol will have a 28-point advantage in terms of the bonus point and points difference when it comes to the overall tallies later in the group. And it just skews the conferences in the Heineken Champions Cup later on in the tournament. Nothing we can do about it, but it isn't just that 80 minutes that we've missed out at the weekend. It has an influence on the next 3 weeks of Champions Cup rugby as well.
Mm. Now, the Olympic Committee have spoken, Richie.
Yeah, before we get there, Manchester City have pulled one back away to RB Leipzig. Riyad Mahrez, the scorer, and Lionel Messi has scored a penalty for Paris Saint-Germain. They're now 4-1 up at home to Club Brugge. But as you say there, Joe, the International Olympic Committee has ruled out postponing the Winter Games in Beijing under any circumstances related to the coronavirus pandemic. And the emergence of the Omicron variant has raised global concern, both in terms of its apparent transmissibility and over its ability to evade immunity from a previous infection. The Tokyo 2020 Olympics, of course, delayed by 12 months following the discovery of COVID-19 in Wuhan. Meanwhile, China has promised resolute countermeasures in response to the United States' diplomatic boycott of the Winter Olympics. US athletes will still be able to compete in February, but the Biden administration won't be sending anyone to China. They're protesting at the mass incarceration and genocide of the Uyghur community in northwest China.
Yeah, initially that boycott story seemed much bigger than it was when it looked like athletes wouldn't be going, but it's very much just a diplomatic boycott on the US part, and I think New Zealand are looking like they're going to follow suit. China responded with the grown-up response, Dave, that they hadn't been invited anyway, so that's where we are in diplomatic relations.
Yeah, it's I mean, what can you say about that situation? I mean, the athletes will still be able to contend. You wonder what the resolute countermeasures are that China are planning. China really don't give they don't give much of credence to the opinion that other countries have of them, do they? So they could pretty much do anything in this situation.
Yeah. So a couple of signings for Derry ahead of the new season?
Yeah, there's pretty much going to be nobody else left for anybody to sign, given the way Derry are going. They've made two more additions to their squad for the 2022 season today. Defender Cameron Dummigan has become the fourth player of the close season to swap Dundalk for Foyle side. Will Patchy, Michael Duffy and Patrick McElhaney go before him. Derry have also snapped up winger Brandon Kavanagh from Shamrock Rovers. The 21-year-old spent an impressive season on loan at Bray Wanderers this past season, just finished.
Now, I suppose this next story, it's easy to take Omicron and to extrapolate that's what's going on here, and I think frankly that's what I've done in my head, because it has been a while since we've seen stories like this.
Yeah, and Tottenham can apply to the Premier League to have Sunday's game with Brighton called off, and it's reported in the past half an hour or so that they are in talks with the Premier League about that game on Sunday. The London club confirming today a COVID-19 outbreak at the club, with at least six players going to miss Thursday's Conference League tie with Rennes. Clubs must have 14 or more players available to fulfil Premier League games, but may apply for postponements due to coronavirus-related reasons. Meanwhile, Chelsea midfielder Mateo Kovacic has tested positive for COVID. The Croatian midfielder had only returned to training yesterday after recovering from a hamstring problem. He'll now miss tomorrow's Champions League trip to Zenit St. Petersburg. Boss Thomas Tuchel says it's a huge setback, and the increased cases in football is a concern for him.
Yeah, I was aware of it, that this can happen, me personally, and I'm absolutely not happy that it's happening, not only as a manager, but as a person. But this is what reality is at the moment, and we have to face it and to be ready to adapt to secure health and do the best thing possible to avoid, what is it, contamination.
Yeah, there is that creeping sense, Dave. We haven't seen these kind of cases in a while bubble up, and I think we're obviously still at the stage of waiting to hear more about Omicron and just how transmissible it is. But sometimes these anecdotal instances tell a story all on their own.
Yeah, I suppose you could make that leap. It would be an easy one to make, but let's just wait for a little more scientific information to come out, which it undoubtedly will over the next couple of weeks. It's the Tottenham situation is a difficult one, because as we know, they've already lost that Premier League game at Turf Moor due to the snow a week ago. So if this weekend is postponed, suddenly they're two games back. and it's going to be very hard for them. They're going to end up in a spell later in the season where they're probably going to have to play three or four times in the space of 8 or 10 days. So it's going to be a really difficult one for Antonio Conte. They were just getting the ship steered in the right direction under Conte since he's come in. They do need to get a result tomorrow night now, how much they desperately want to advance to the next round of the Europa Conference League. Only Antonio Conte will know that in his heart of hearts. But the Premier League game is obviously of a bigger priority for them at the weekend. And if they lose two already, 14 games into the new campaign, or 13 as it is for them, logistically that's a major issue.
Michael and Kerry, Cuevan Keller can't get a game even though Liverpool already qualified. Surprised? That's a fair point. I'm sure Queven's kicking his heels thinking, if not tonight, when, Jurgen?
Yeah, and he has been given some game time in the Champions League in the past. So it is an unusual one. I know it's a dead rubber in terms of Liverpool, but it's obviously a massive game for Milan. And maybe there's a question of trying to keep the momentum going. They're playing very well at the moment. Maybe Alisson specifically asked to play in the game. You just wouldn't know. But Cuevan Keller, who would have been looking at this game as soon as Liverpool booked their place in the last 16, I'd say in his mind he was targeting this game. What a chance it would have been to line out at the San Siro. It's probably a place that's on the bucket list of most young players to go and play and have a go at taking down Milan. The other game in that group is obviously of huge importance as well, but it's disappointing for him because sooner or later the question he's going to have to ask himself is, what is my future? What do I hope to achieve in my club career? And at what point is enough and I have to go out and play my own furrow and try and establish myself somewhere else?
One last one, Richie. For West Ham, it's been a fairy tale season so far. It now looks like they're a centre-half pairing both out for a long time.
Yeah, West Ham defender Kurt Zouma expected to face a lengthy spell out of action after suffering a hamstring tendon injury. He was substituted during their 3-2 win over Chelsea on Saturday lunchtime. No time frame placed upon his return as the 27-year-old joins fellow centre-back Angelo Ogbonna on the sidelines. Looks like they will have to recruit in January.
Yeah, they will, Dave, won't they? Zouma gone, Ogbonna pretty much gone for the season.
It's a disaster.
Yeah,
it really is. I mean, we've been discussing for weeks how this pinch in the season was going to come very soon for West Ham United. The fact that they were operating off such a settled, say, 13 or 14 players was the reason they've been able to play so well in the first quarter, third of the season. But then once you got to December and the Europa League group stage ongoing and all these festive fixtures, their scant squad was going to cost them, and now they've lost their first choice central defensive partnership, and the two of them have been brilliant together. So they're both gone. Dawson is the third man up, so he's already in the team, and they're going to have to buy at least one top class centre half in January if they're to keep the momentum they have, because the squad is threadbare.
Yeah, sure is. We are out of time, fellas. Richie, thank you.
Nice one.
Dave McIntyre, thanks a mil.
Thank you, lads.
Cheers.